Hello YouTube. In this video, SSD Able is going to react to my claims regarding abs. Should you do ab exercises such as decline sit-ups and leg raises, or is it enough to do compound lifts such as knee flexions like squats? Now, how was that? How was that impression? In my head, it sounded amazing, although that's usually my problem. In my head, my impressions sound amazing. And then I listen to it back and it's like, man, this is really shit. But yeah, I want to, amongst other things, react to NH, natural hypertrophy, and the things that he's saying about ab training and what you can accomplish with that, whether you should do it, and really just how big of a return you're going to get on your investment if you're training your abs. Because honestly, if you're listening to him, he is very much selling the dream. He's very much saying the things that I want to hear myself as well, that if you're training your abs, you're going to have a lot more visible abs at higher body fat percentages, and it's not going to be necessary to diet down to 10, 12% body fat to have really nice visible abs. And yeah, we talked about bulking, we talked about accepting higher body fat percentages, not wanting to be so lean all the time to, you know, to not cripple ourselves completely lifestyle-wise and life satisfaction-wise. But on the other hand, we all want aesthetics. I mean, ultimately, that's why a lot of us got into lifting, because we wanted to look better. And it's really hard to deny the fact that having visible abs is a big part of that. And it's been said for a long time that abs are made in the kitchen. And yeah, sure, you can train your abs, and doing crunches accomplishes a lot of good things. But no, abs are not one of them. And I'm not really going to get into the nitty-gritty of why you need to diet and why you need a low body fat percentage to have visible abs, because I think it should be pretty obvious to anyone who spent a minute in the world of training and in the world of fitness. Yes, you can only have so many layers of fat covering your abs. You can have the most developed abs on the planet, but they're not going to be visible if they are too fat. When it comes to people like NH, we have to acknowledge, and I think that's important, that his body fat distribution is very, very favorable for having great abs. So I looked at a couple of these clips where he is sitting there with his shirt off and he looks very, very aesthetic. And he's talking about how it's great to train your abs because it will remove the burden of having to be so lean. And unfortunately, it's just impossible to ignore the fact that his abdominal wall and midsection looks like that of a person in general who is 12% body fat or so.
I shed a ton of fat in my core. When I lose fat, it's usually all on this in this area first.
This is just something that's important to acknowledge, that before we get too bogged down in analyzing the ab training routine of NH and the benefits of ab training, he is the kind of guy who would probably have abs even if he never really trained his abs so intensely. Now, how much would that help someone like me, who is a lot more central body fat storage dominant? That's a more interesting question to me. Clients ask me all the time, should I train my abs? Do you recommend ab training? Is it worth it? Is it going to create a noticeable visual effect? And it's very hard to answer this objectively, and it's also very hard to give a short answer to this. And I'm not really going to give a short answer now either. The truth is, and this is what I always tell them as well, is that I have never seen a guy who was muscular, so was already well-trained, like me, let's say. I am well-trained. I don't have amazing abs. So my abs are definitely not going to be one of the first things that you notice unless I'm super lean and I'm flexing my abs. I've never seen someone like that who went from not great ab development to then spending a year or something like that, or a couple of years really focusing on ab training, and the rest of their body looked relatively similar, but now they had much, much better ab development, which is actually a big shame, because I actually don't know if I could have seen that. It's just that nobody's actually doing this. And I would actually say that if there's anyone amongst you who has done this, please come forward. Like, please tell us. And please hit me up on Instagram or shoot me an email and send me those photos, because I would love to see it. And if you're okay with it, I would love to show it on YouTube. Like, I would love to publish a video about this, like faceless, however you want it. But it would be super informative, because it would actually address a question which I feel like has not been addressed by anyone really in the manner that we want it. for a very long time. And this is a kind of a burning question. And we just keep hearing the same cliches over and over and over again. And I actually Googled after this, like I was looking for anecdotes like this, like ab transformation bodybuilder, direct ab training results bodybuilder. And no, it's like articles about like 10 best ab exercises, like the inconvenient truth about ab exercises and things like that. So if you have a cool anecdote like this, please, 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 I would absolutely love to see it. I would adore to see it. Okay. I have to be honest, I also have anecdotes myself, which are also not super helpful. So I have done what probably a lot of you have done as well, that I've went through phases where I trained my abs directly and then I didn't. Like I trained them again. Of course, I hated it from the get-go, realized that, okay, this is not super exciting, like on these weighted crunches, weighted sit-ups, whatever. You're going to get to a point in terms of progressive overload. You're going to get a bit stronger. Your abs are going to be sore initially, then not so much. And I mean, you're going to get to a point where you just cannot really progress it anymore, right? So like once you're doing, let's say like a weighted decline sit-up with like a 30 kilo dumbbell in your hand, maybe you're hardcore and you're holding like two weight plates, or you're loading up an easy bar and you're holding that here and it's like 40 kilos, 50 kilos, and you're doing like 10 reps with that. I think I was up at like 40 at one point, which is not super impressive. I mean, you can get there. The reason why it seems much is because it's, you know, I mean, you have to get used to the exercise and there are some neurological adaptations that have to take place. But if you're a strong dude on squats and, you know, Romanian deadlifts and things like that, you can probably handle 40 kilos with an easy bar and do sit-ups with that. It's just not really feasible to progress it any further than that. On the other hand, at that point, some things might start feeling funny. For me, for example, my hip flexors started always feeling really funny, which I have definitely a lot of comment on hip flexors. So if nothing else, you will benefit from that. Of course, a lot of people have back issues from doing crunches and things like that. So eventually we just come to hate these ab exercises and we just stop them. Now, on the theme of getting more muscular in general, does having more ab development muscle-wise, is that going to help you to have a better six-pack at higher body fat percentages? The answer is that absolutely 100%, 1,000% yes. So, I mean, debating this is just so... Like, anybody who says that it doesn't and that it just keeps repeating that abs are made in the kitchen, it's like, I really, really hope that that person is not passionate about fitness, because it's very sad if you are passionate about something and you're just making claims without spending even a second thinking it through, okay? It is a muscle. So if the muscle is bigger, more prominent in some way, then it's going to protrude. Now, I will say that I think this is something that we always say. To be honest, I have absolutely no idea how a bigger ab muscle looks like. So that's kind of another issue. Like with the arms, yes, like maybe when you start training, it's like this, and then you're training it more, then it's like this, and eventually it gets to something like this. So like you can see the progression of it actually getting bigger, the muscle itself. With the abs, like, I don't know, like what happens? Like there are these ridges that you see, like those horizontal lines on your abs. Like do they become like longer, so that's why they protrude more? Like with the abs, I have absolutely no idea how a bigger ab muscle looks like compared to a smaller ab muscle, right? All we can see is that, yeah, like that same six pack now seems to be more visible at a higher body fat percentage, or this person didn't have a six pack before, now he does. But how does it actually look like when, okay, so now this guy is 10% body fat, before he was 10% body fat, but now his abs are bigger. Like we say things like, well, it's popping more, but what does that mean? I mean, yeah, he has a more visible six pack. Maybe he's just leaner. I don't know. It's a little bit difficult to conceptualize, but I think it's a relatively safe assumption to make that if you're training a muscle, it grows. If it grows, it becomes more visible, even if there is a layer of something covering it, right? Now, what's not talked about as much is that there are other muscles around here that you can train and that should also contribute to this goal of revealing your abs. If there are bigger muscles on your lower back, at the erector spinae, for example, or if your oblique muscles are more prominent, what all of that should do, in a way, is actually stretching out the skin and the fat there, basically spreading it thinner, so what's here in front should become more visible as well. That's kind of what we are seeing with people. So I'm just going to show you a couple of examples. There's a picture here where I'm probably, you know, in the high teens, maybe around like 20% body fat, more or less untrained, I would say, and more or less zero ab definition, at least on this picture. There is another picture of me, similar body fat, like 20%-ish. I still don't have like a great six pack or anything. Like I don't have visible abs, but there is more, like you can see that there is something on that abdominal wall other than just fat. So there's an outline of something like at least you can tell, even if you're just looking at the midsection of the guy, that like, okay, he's doing at least something besides just sitting on the couch. On the other picture, not so much, right? That is because that area now is more muscular. Like here's a picture of Brian Borstein as a teenager. He is pretty lean on these pictures, but he just doesn't have like any real like muscle development on his body. He has a good structure. You can tell that he was an active kid, pretty athletic one, but you know, like kids, like there's only so muscular a kid can be if unless they have like some kind of a myostatin deficiency or something like that. And you don't really see anything on his core. And if you're looking at him later at like very similar body fat percentages, I mean, it's a pretty stark contrast, right? Same thing with Dave McConey. So he looks lean, but like nothing is going on the core. Later, I mean, who is that Ken? Or who is that guy with those crazy good abs? So just being more muscular should help you to reveal your abs, even if you're not like specializing on those, you know, rectus abdominis muscles. What's also a testament to that is if you're looking at certain strongmen, powerlifters, or in this case, he's none of those, Scott Mendelson. I think he's an arm wrestler, right? I mean, this guy, what is his body fat on these pictures? Like probably closer to 30% than 20. And he has visible abs. Now, again, probably part of it is body fat distribution, but I mean, at a certain point, like, okay, like how is all that fat gonna be distributed? Like he still probably has an amount of fat covering his abs, which, you know, for most of us would be more than enough to make them non-visible, but he still has visible abs there. I don't think it's because he is doing like really amazing, really specialized ab exercises with the stretch-mediated hypertrophy and all of those things, and that's why he has those abs. Probably he is just getting really good like muscle activation from other exercises like compound lifts or whatever, which maybe most of us don't get so much of a stimulus from that, and maybe he has just genetically really good ab muscles. That's not the point. The point is now is just that part of why he has those visible abs at such a high body fat must be because of the ab muscles themselves or other muscles in that area, and not the low body fat. Not Ed Cohen. What's the name? Eddie Hall, right? The guy who fought the Mountain recently in some kind of a boxing match. Again, like not low body fat at all. And he has really, really impressive abs for someone at such a high body fat. And we see this time and time again. So the point is, developing muscles that are in that region, I think, should help. And thus, when it comes to the question of should you train your abs directly if you don't have great ab development and you need to get super lean to have any ab visibility, the answer is probably yes. I think that, again, going back to this investor's mindset or the smart betting man's mindset, we are not sure, but given everything that we do know, what is the most likely thing to make sense to get us closer to our goals? I would say it, I would have a very hard time justifying any sort of answer that would argue against direct ab training. Now, of course, at this point, the question will pop up. But will compound lifts be enough or won't they be enough? Because, yes, of course, they do train the abs. They will help you. Will they be enough for a lot of people? They are. Like, there are people who actually never really did direct ab training and they just had amazing ab development. Eric Helms, for example, I think he has a story like most of us do. Maybe he had some on and off phases where he experimented with direct ab training, but for the most part, he just did compound lifts, squats, deadlifts, those sorts of things, even, you know, chin-ups, overhead presses, basically anything that requires some sort of bracing. He got enough development from that. But again, Eric, like NH, is one of those people who has just really favorable body fat distribution in that regard. As to just answering the question of, or compound lifts enough to develop your abs in general, I would say that they are about as optimal to develop your abs as they are to develop your erector spinae. For a lot of people, they will get your lower back nicely visible and you will get all the aesthetic benefits from having well-developed erector muscles, which are actually immense. Like they definitely do add to your aesthetic appeal, but for some people, they were just not quite enough. I am one of those people, for example. I would say that if you're someone who has been training for years and you're fairly strong on various free weight compound lifts, and you need to be like 12% body fat or leaner to have your abs shown, probably you should be training your abs. I would also say, and this might apply to some of you and not others, but with the rise of these, you know, intelligent training camps, which I'm a big supporter of, by the way, but, you know, don't do these exercises like these big hard hitter old school exercises, but do chest supported rows instead of, you know, like bent over rows or cable rows, which again, in general, I'm in favor of. Don't do, let's say, barbell overhead presses, do like a dumbbell overhead press seated, or do like a cable overhead press seated, which again, in general, I'm a supporter of. But it comes with consequences. Like, they actually might have a more favorable resistance profile for the actual target muscles, and that's good, because that's the primary purpose of those exercises. But eventually you end up replacing so many lifts with these more optimized versions that provide more stability, better equipment, blah, blah. A lot of those base assumptions that we have, such as, you know, core work is not needed because your core is getting enough work from compound lifts. Like, eventually we get to the point where, what compound lifts? Like, all of that, you know, chest supported, back supported, whatever supported variant that you're doing, because you're doing actually nothing that requires a lot of stabilization at this point. So that thing that used to be true in general, this assumption is not valid for you anymore. Like, you actually do need some additional core work to even get you to the same level which, like, most people used to get just by default, just by doing these exercises to train their delts, quads, etc. Same applies, by the way, to, you know, arms. You know, I traditionally really didn't need to do a lot of arm work, and, you know, like this 39 centimeters or whatever, like, I could just stay there just by doing presses and pulls. And then I started playing around with all these pull downs and, you know, like cool, like fly press variants and whatever. Eventually I did get to the point where, okay, like, probably at this point I do need more arm work just to stay put, or just to keep developing at that same, well, more or less non-existent pace. But my arms don't get the same amount of indirect work anymore. And probably, like, the same applies to abs and lower back and a lot of these muscles, which do get trained indirectly by doing free weight compound movements. Another thing that I completely agree with NH about is that this whole worry about thickening your waist and having a wider waist by doing a lot of ab work, I think that it can be a valid concern in some cases, but I think that often the people that are the most worried about it should exactly be the people that for whom this is not a valid concern. So if you already have a wider waist, like, it's just, that's your bone structure, you don't have this crazy good V taper, I would say that in that case, for you to do things to make that wide waist, like, not so wide appearing, and to create more of an illusion of a V-taper, like that's going to be a serious uphill battle. Like, there can be edge cases, of course, but, like, yeah, if you have a wide waist, like, you're not going to turn that into, like, a tiny waist. Like, there, like, that's your bone structure at a certain point. If you're too fat, of course, that's a different story, but that's not what we are talking about here. So being in that position, or having maybe a slightly even wider waist, that's not really going to make a difference at that point. However, the extra benefits that you might get from having more visible abs, even without flexing them, is going to be huge. Most people that are, and I mean, if you want to impress anyone, I mean, those will be the people that you want to impress. Because, I mean, your gym buddies, who cares? But, you know, gym pop people that are most of the people in your life, if they think that you look very impressive, I mean, that matters more. Most people look at the abs immediately. Like, you could actually have, like, completely underdeveloped everything else, and they just look at your abs and it's like, whoa, you remember that Ryan Gosling scene, right, from that movie? Ridiculous. That, I mean, he does not have a narrow waist at all. But because he has, like, 1.5 horizontal lines and an ab cage, and that's visible on his abs, immediately appears just somehow impressive. Now, this is not to say that a V-taper, like, doesn't matter and it doesn't help aesthetically. Of course it does, but I would say that is going to be overpowered by actually having ab visibility. So if you have visible abs here in the front, which is where people are going to see you from, right? That's going to matter a lot more than you having a narrower waist. And once again, getting back to what I said earlier, if you're thickening your waist by getting more muscular there, that should also help with ab visibility, because it's going to stretch out the skin and the fat there. But the next thing I want to talk about is what I think are realistic expectations to have when it comes to training your abs directly. So your abs are now whatever in some way. What can you achieve by training them directly? How much can you transform that look? And again, because we don't really have really good anecdotes, it's hard to answer this exactly, but I think it's a very reasonable assumption to make that if you're looking at your abs, if you can flex your abs and have them visible at any body fat percentage, I think it's not a stretch to assume that with a lot of work, you could get your abs to show or almost show as much without flexing them. Because if they are visible by flexing, that means that, okay, like you have the potential to reveal them there. It's just you need something to make them more prominent. And I mean, in a way, that's what we are doing with every muscle, right? So, like my arms, I think without flexing are like 33 centimeters, something like that. And if I flex them, then they will be like 39. I'm pretty sure there was a point where they were 33 centimeters flexed, right? So that's what we are kind of doing. Like we are bringing our low points closer to what our past high points were. And that's what we would try to do with the abs as well. Now, again, I don't quite know how a more or less developed ab muscle looks like because I can just see the six pack. So I'm not sure, like maybe something else is happening when you're flexing them, like their angle changes, and that's partly what's protruding through. I don't know, but I think that's like a reasonable guess. And I think it also is just a good mindset to have, like, okay, I have this. I just need to make this more apparent. Like, it's already possible to reveal this with flexing it. So, by training it more and developing it, it should get close to this state even without flexing it. For me personally, if I could get my abs to show at 20% body fat without flexing them, at least to some degree, that would be about the return on my investment where I would think, like, okay, like this was a good investment to train my abs really hard and consistently for like, a couple of years. Everybody has a different goal. I think it's also important to think about or useful to think about that. That's my goal, but it's not everybody's goal. Like I talked with Brian Borstein. He said that the reason why he would want more developed abs is so that they pop more when he's doing a photo shoot. For me, like I don't care about that. Like by the time I do a photo shoot, I will be lean enough so it doesn't matter. Like my abs are gonna be good looking either way. But yeah, so it's good to set realistic expectations and to not have a goal that's like completely ridiculous. Like, don't set the goal if now you don't have any ab visibility and you have like these staggered, non-symmetrical abs. Like, don't set the goal of looking like Lazar Angelov, right? Because that's probably not going to happen, or Matt Ogus. Another side note, by the way, which might change your perspective entirely, is maybe it would be worth it for you to try shaving your abs or shaving your stomach if you have never done that before. Because, what you will notice with all of those guys who have really impressive midsections is that none of them are hairy. Okay, like it's very rare to see someone with a good amount of body hair and seeing their abs that way. Like a lot of these guys just really don't grow much body hair. For me personally, like my abs are not my hairiest body part. Let's just say they are my legs, okay? But like if you're looking at my abs now. I'm not too lean anymore because even though I didn't plan to, it looks like I kind of took my own advice about bulking, but that's a different story. And guys, like this is going to be YouTube revolution. I'm going to show you the difference here on camera. So I'm gonna put this out here so my wife doesn't murder me, that the entire living room is covered in hair. So now they look like this. There you go. You see the difference? Yeah, I don't see any difference. Okay, this was a complete waste of time. Okay, I'm a complete idiot. Now let's talk a bit about ab training. Like, how do I recommend you training your abs? And actually, that's what I'm planning to do as well. So, I mean, I guess I wouldn't do it if I wouldn't think it's a good idea. So, NH is completely right, and I agree with him that there are just some muscle groups and some exercises where there's never a good time to do them. Like, when is the ideal time to train your abs? Never, because it sucks, right? So, by putting them in between exercises, that can be an amazing time saver, and also just kind of sneakily getting them in without having to like dedicate a separate slot for your abs. So, yeah, if you do bench presses, doing some crunches on the bench in between, or if you're doing lateral raises, doing some ab exercises in between sets, that's great, I think. So, I agree with him on that. Now, on the actual ab exercises themselves, I actually don't agree with him because I think that decline sit-ups, weighted, yes, it is good that you can overload them. However, for a lot of people, it's just going to be a giant hip flexor workout, and a lot of people will also get back issues from that, or at least back pain from that. And you will feel it. I mean, it makes sense. Like if you're doing a sit-up on a decline bench and you're anchoring your feet, what's going to happen is that you're gonna pull yourself up by your legs, basically. I mean, that's going to be your anchoring point, and that's going to be the point that gives you stability, which is good. But the thing that will initiate the movement always is your hip flexor. Now, it just so happens that if you are contracting your hip flexor, you cannot really do that without also contracting your abs. However, oftentimes it will actually be an isometric contraction for your abs, and you actually have to be very purposeful to even initiate the movement at all with your abs. Like a lot of people actually do when they do decline sit-ups, they actually do it with a straight back. And actually, you can see that on a video that NH made recently where he's demonstrating how he's doing the sit-up. On the way back, his back is completely straight. And that's actually not what you want when you're training your abs, because the function of the abs is not to go up and down straight, that's hips. Like that's why it's hip flexor. Think about what you're doing during a hip hinge, right? You're going up and down with a straight back, and that's hip movement. You don't want hip movement. I mean, it's going to be inevitable, but the main thing you want is not hip movement, it's actually spinal movement. The function of the abs is flexing the spine. So, ideally, what you would actually want is some sort of a setup which allows you to go from arching to hunching your back. So, protraction, arching. And I think that the best exercise for that is not a decline sit-up, but actually some kind of an ab mat crunch or a Bosu ball crunch. So I have an ab mat. Maybe I should show it to you. Right, so this is my ab mat. I actually don't use it for crunches at all. I just use it for extending my range of motion when I'm doing chest press movements. But in theory, you know, the purpose of this is that your lower back is here at the bottom, and then you can kind of like arch your back over this, and then it allows you to go into that full-ish range of motion with your abs while your lower back is still supported. It doesn't work great for me, at least. My lower back is still not supported, it still comes off from here. A good way around this is either having something with like a bit of a bigger arch, like a Bosu ball. I think that's great. Or to actually elevate your feet. So what you could do, for example, so now I'll go into NH mode and I'm gonna demonstrate it. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm holding the microphone and I'm going to show you. So like this, basically, my feet is up, which actually forces my spine into some posterior tilt. So it's not going to be like going back and forth, which is, I don't know like the proper term for this, but basically that is what's creating those shearing forces that you're always hearing about, and that's creating a lot of the back pain and the back issues. So elevating your feet, and then I can actually go up and down, and I can let my abs go into that stretch and some contraction on top. When it comes to leg raises, again, NH loves leg raises. My guess is that his hip flexors are very robust and he doesn't know the very pleasant feeling of having inflamed, flared up hip flexors, which are screaming at you as soon as you're raising your leg, which can happen if you're doing a lot of things like leg raises or reverse crunches with improper form. Again, if you're doing leg raises, yeah, will that train your abs? Yes, because basically you cannot train your hip flexors without training the abs, but the abs are not connected to the legs, which is not a very helpful statement because, yeah, right, and your forearms are also not connected to your pecs, but it's still going to help if you're creating a bigger lever arm with like a dumbbell fly or something. So, yes, the abs are not connected to the legs, which doesn't help you, but it's important to know that what you want is not the leg movement per se. It's just kind of a side effect or a byproduct. What you actually want is the same thing as what you did here with the crunch. It's just that spinal movement. So if you're tilting your pelvis up, which again, I'm going to show you. So when you're doing a leg raise or a reverse crunch, like this part of the movement, that's actually I feel some isometric contraction in my abs, but not that much. What's actually helping is this. Now there's way more contraction in my abs. So this is what the reverse crunch really, or the leg raise really accomplishes. And that initial thing down there, it's mainly hip flexor with some ab involvement. I'm guessing ideally what you would want is actually also like a bigger range of motion. So ideally, I would actually not do it here. I would actually let my lower back hang off of the couch in this case, and then go into that contraction, and then I would get that weighted stretch. I wouldn't do that because I would think that that's like way more dangerous, like from a spinal health perspective, and crunches are way safer. I don't know, to be honest, how much of a differentiation there will be with like lower ab development and upper ab development. It's going to develop the entire ab structure, and you can again feel it. I'm doing a crunch. I wasn't even doing like full range of motion or anything. I just like raised my upper back and tapped my lower abs, and they were there contracting. I would say that crunches are great. And honestly, I would just do some sort of like a fuller range of motion crunch like this. I think oftentimes you can do it without anchoring your feet. You won't have as much stability, but again, how much stability do you really need? Like, you're not gonna be moving hundreds of kilos there. Maybe you're gonna hold like a 20 kilo dumbbell. You can do that without bracing your legs. And it's going to be more of a just, in this case, I think the getting in tonnage and just focus on tonnage over time, over a long period of time, as opposed to progressive overload, it does apply to the abs way more than it does to other muscle groups. It doesn't apply entirely because, again, it's a muscle like anything else. So over time, you want some sort of progression, but you just kind of get too overzealous about it because it's just going to be awkward at best and dangerous at worst. But I think that not anchoring your feet and just doing crunches is great. The problem oftentimes, once again, with anchoring your feet is that you're turning it into a hip flexor movement and not so much an ab movement. If you want to, however, anchor your feet, which is going to be beneficial from a stability and overloadability perspective, then I would suggest doing it like this, like elevating your feet. Like, so your feet should be higher when you're hooking them in than where your lower back is lying. So I think that is good. If you want to do reverse crunches, my favorite variant for that is actually doing it with a cable. So I'm going to clip in a video, but basically I'm lying on a bench in front of a cable stack. I'm hooking the cable onto these ankle straps that girls are using for the glute kickbacks. And basically I am in line in this case. So my feet are in line with my torso. So basically the cable attachment where the origin of the cable is in line with my body. And I am just basically getting through that initial phase as quickly as possible. I'm not doing a straight leg movement. I'm just pulling my legs up, and then I'm just focusing on tilting my pelvis upwards. So once again, I'm gonna show you. This is very comical that I'm holding the microphone like this, but this is what I'm doing. So I'm lying. Basically the cable is going from the same height as where my torso is. And I'm just pulling my leg up here, and I'm just focusing on this candlestick kind of movement. That is tilting the pelvis up. Once again, it moves the spine, trains the abs really nicely. I would do this. I wouldn't mess with leg raises because, fuck, you're not training your hip flexors. And it's good to train the hip flexors, but I don't, like, leg raises, I think are just not the way to do it because it's just way too much loading all of a sudden. And if you have weak hip flexors now, like, that's going to flare the fuck out of them. So I just wouldn't do that personally. But, you know, NH might beg to differ. So yeah, folks, I think that is pretty much it on ab training for now. I don't really have like a formulated plan on this for myself just yet, but I will soon. So when that's done, I'm going to discuss it either in a separate video, or maybe I'm just going to mention it on like an upcoming podcast or something. But yeah, I'm excited about this, and I will train my abs directly, which, and to be honest, I agree with NH. I should have done this a long time ago already. So that will be it for today. And yeah, let me know what your thoughts are. And please, if you have a good story about this, if you have a transformation that you can show where you were already a trained dude and then you started training your abs and it was visible that your abs, like, not so much in line with everything else, got more developed, I would absolutely love to see it, and I would love to show your results on my YouTube channel. So that's it for today. Please comment if you have any thoughts to share, ask questions, like the video if you liked it. Subscribe for more content like this and check out the show description for information about how you can work together with me in various forms. And with that, I will see you in the next video.